doing a free roll here.
All right, I would like to call to order the meeting of the Grover Beach City Council. This is Monday, June 20, 2011. And may we have a moment of silence, please. If you will join me, I'll stand in a moment of silence. Thank you very much. If you'll stay standing, please, we will do the flag salute. And I would ask Mr. Ekbom, would you please lead us in the flag salute?
Please join me in saluting our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Donna, may we have a roll call, please?
Here. Here. Here.
Here. All right. Council, may we have closed session announcements, please?
Certainly, Honorable Mayor, Council members. On June 6, 2011, after meeting in closed session, the City Council on one item, which was labor negotiations with all employee group, reconvened into open session, and there were no reportable actions taken.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda is our ceremonial calendar, and I would like to ask Kathy Petker, Director of Parks and Recreation, and her assistant, Nora, to please come forward. This is the presentation of the Certificates of Appreciation with reference to this year's Spring Garden Tour participants.
Good evening. Can you hear me? Okay.
Thank you.
My name is Kathy Petker. I'm the Parks and Recreation Director, and we had a Spring Garden Tour and Plant Exchange recently, and this is an event that we've had for over 15 years, and when the event began, it was conducted by the Grover Beautiful Committee. This event is a perfect example of how parks make life better, the theme of the California Parks and Recreation Society. It makes life better because the goal of the event is to acknowledge residents of Grover Beach for the hard work they put in to creating beautiful landscape yards, use of drought-tolerant plantings, being creative by solving unique gardening dilemmas, and through their hard work, beautifying the city. It also gives others the chance to learn and improve their own gardening space. What's really great about this event is that it really brings the community together when residents feel safe to be able to share their homes and hard work with their neighbors and community. This year, we had folks from all over the Central Coast, as well as many who were visiting from out of the area to take the self-guided tour, despite the unseasonably rainy day. I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Nora O'Donnell, our recreation coordinator, and she's the one who will tell you all about the event and the actual award winners, and I will assist in that. Oh, yes, and we need our Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commissioners to come up, please, and help us in the process that are present. We have Leah Greeley, Commissioner, and Vice Chair DeSantos, and our other commissioners were not able to attend this evening, so they're going to help us.
Nominations for the gardens are accepted throughout the end of April. Some participants self-nominate their homes and or businesses, and some are nominated by others. Also, each Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commissioner has a zone or an area that they drive around to find homes that they can nominate as well. There are some really beautiful gardens to look at this year, including the city-sponsored demonstration garden at Ramona Garden Park, which is planted with lots of varieties of low water and drought tolerant plants and maintained on a volunteer basis by Nicholas Ombres of Mission Pacifica Landscape Development. We also want to thank a couple of other volunteers who sat at different homes and helped check people in: Pam Spicer, Barbara Nichols, and Tracy Strickland. Now to recognize our garden people. So I know that there are some of the homeowners in the in the audience. So as you hear your name, please come forward so we can recognize you. First, I want to recognize Dee Santos. It's at her home that we have the plant exchange and Master Gardener.
Her beautiful Zen garden featured a wide expansive lawn flanked by two fountains, lemon tree with an assortment of melodious wind chimes and hanging art and well-tended plants. This was truly a peaceful oasis.
Next up was Jacqueline Ginsburg of 1480 Atlantic City Avenue. I haven't seen her either. But she had a great front yard where a delightful flagstone patio invited one to sit for a spell. And then she had a side yard that were with a coast honeysuckle, ferns, and a beautiful bougainvillea surrounding a charming grassy area. Next up are, we put these two together because they were right next door to one another, and they were wonderful gardens. Walter and Lisa French of 1042 Atlantic City Avenue. They here? No. And Scott and Nina Silos of 1056 Atlantic City Avenue. So Nina's here. These two wonderful neighbors greatly enhance the curb appeal of this busy thoroughfare, Atlantic City. We encourage participants to take their time meandering through the front yard of 1056 and the front yard of 1042. Scott and Nina shared before and after photos so participants could easily appreciate the hard work put in to create the newly renovated space. Artificial turf fooled the eye, and bird baths, fountains, bird houses, ferns, various grasses, birds of paradise, English lavender, staghorn, and hydrangeas were just a small portion of what people experienced in these two delightful spaces. Thank you very much. Next up, we had Tom and Janine Carter of 571 Newport and Sean Sousa, who designed and created the space. So we're going to recognize all three of them. A beautiful Cecil Bruner rose arbor, flowering plum, society garlic, citrus trees, yarrow, kangaroo paws, and jasmine were just a taste of what could be found at this delightfully re-landscaped garden set behind an old-fashioned white picket fence. And that was just the front of the house. There was even more to enjoy in the backyard. So thank you very much for putting your house on display and for all your hard work, Sean. Next up, we had the Hernandez family of 175 South 5th Street. Raymond is a longtime city employee, and I know, I just put your name out there. Heading to the south side of Grover, a stop at this fun-filled garden was a must. Tiki torches, potato tree, southwestern memorabilia complete with a burrow, cactus, and wagon wheel fountain were just a bit of what could be found in this tinker's paradise. There was a lot to see in such a small space, and I'm sure Raymond had a great time regaling participants with how he and his boys brought his vision to life. This was truly a family affair. Next up, John Paschini of 1256 Mentone. His garden was in the front of the yard. It was right on the street, and it was a wonderful mix of cactus and succulents. So it showed participants a great and creative example of drought-tolerant planting, and we really appreciate his participation. Mm-hmm. The Sarabia family of 1155 Refugio Court. I don't think they're here. But this was a tour favorite in 2009, and we offered it again for the beautiful floral display in the front and practical approach to pond protection in the back, as well as a very creative and colorful use of stamped and colored concrete. The next one up was Dennis Nolman of 1220 San Sorrento Court. This was another past tour favorite. In fact, he'd been on the home tour twice before. The homeowner extended his gardening talents into the city-owned space to the left of his home with a beautiful array of poppies, daisies, and wildflowers. He totally revamped his front yard from the previous appearance on the tour and was inspired by the Italian countryside. There is a fabulous purple rose, amazing dahlias in several colors, birdhouses, and in the back, a delightful space surrounded by a wall built with reclaimed brick. And our last home, the Sarabias just came in. Awesome. Come on up. You can't get by.
Come on down.
We want to recognize you for your hard work. Here we go. We want to thank you very much for participating in the tour again this year. You guys don't want to be in the picture?
Thank you.
And our last home was the home of Dorothy Shahinian and her husband, but he wanted her name on the certificate only, 1770 Baden Street. Since their last appearance on the tour, the family in this space totally revamped both the front and the backyards, and they created a beautiful new look. Tree fern, drought-tolerant grasses, maple, succulents, lavender, and much more gave to...
Ed and Eddie.
Okay, I'm sure you've got a few words to say, but
yes.
We would like to present to you the certificate of appreciation presented to the Five Cities Men Club in recognition of zebra renovation, fence construction at the Ramona Garden Park. You've done a wonderful job. Comments?
Thank you. You know, Five Cities Men Club just loves doing local projects, South County projects. That's all we do, in fact. And this was actually a big one for us. 23 different days, 17 of our members were working for 450 hours on this thing, plus about $10,000 in our club money. But we love doing things in the South County and beautifying things, just like the garden tour before us. We're all working together to make this as nice a place as we deserve, which is beautiful. We're glad to be here.
Dave, thank you so much.
Thank you. Our president, Minas Kalugin, Bill Tappan, Alan Buck, these are the hardworking guys. Whenever you see a men's club project, Five Cities Men's Club, these guys are right in the middle of it doing all the work.
We can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
Good job.
This is beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor, can I make a comment?
Yes, please.
I would like to say that I really appreciate the work that was done on the gazebo. I myself paint my own house every 3 years, and I'd say that's an extremely professional paint job. Thank you.
All right, the next item on the agenda is an award, the American Planning Association Award for the West Grand Avenue Master Plan. And I would like to introduce Lisa Wise of Lisa Wise Consulting. Lisa?
Good evening, Mayor Pro Tem, members of the council. Is this on?
Good evening, Mayor Pro Tem, members of the council. I'd like to present the city with the 2011 Central Coast Section American Planning Association Award for the West Grand Avenue Master Plan. The Outstanding Planning Award is given for plans that illustrate best practices and innovation. The jury of the giving the award from the APA noted that the project is an excellent example of foresight and bold moves on the part of civic leaders to refine the vision for their community and to take steps to implement that vision through effective policy and planning measures. Slocog was also impressed with the award and the plan and recently called it an exemplary sustainable community strategies project. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank
you.
Very good. We do appreciate it.
There it is. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. The next item on the agenda is a proclamation recognizing the 100th anniversary of the incorporation of the City of Arroyo Grande and commemorating the city's centennial celebration. I'm going to pass on this item. This is a proclamation that is going to be presented to the City of Arroyo Grande in person by Mayor Scholes, who will do it at, I think they're having a special meeting later this month, and he will make that presentation in person. So let's move on to next item on the agenda. I want to go back to the agenda review. At this time, the council will review the order of business to be conducted, receive any requests, or make any announcements regarding any change in the order of the day. Do any of the council members have any changes in the agenda review?
I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda as presented.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion passes. Moving on to the next item, we have public communications. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items that are not on the agenda. Is there anybody in the public that will wish to come forward? Do so now, please.
Hi, City Council. Notice John's missing tonight. Bob Hayes at 281 South 9th Street. I'm here for two reasons tonight, but the one that I wanted to address to you right now is, and then on top of that, there's no transparency. And the grand jury's final report that came out a couple of weeks ago was the icing on the cake. The public has been speaking out about these problems for going on 2 years now. And finally, the grand jury has vindicated everything that has been publicly said. So it's time that the city council takes some serious steps in directing our representative to start cleaning house over there. We need to get our orders in a fair. The second thing that I came before you is on the agenda tonight, and I know I can't talk about it, but I wrote a letter, and with your permission, I'd like to give it to the city clerk.
You may.
Thank you.
Please. Is there anybody else that would like to speak? Come forward, please.
Jeff Pinak from Oceano and Surfrider, slow.surfrider.org. I'm here as an activist and actually, Surfrider cares about the health of our oceans and beaches and for all people. And through conservation, activism, research, and education. And I'm here tonight because we're being active, and we've certainly done a lot of research, and we're hoping to educate. So let's review. Thank you, Bob, for your comments. So as we go back to about 6 months or 8 months ago, we have employees at the plant who refused to do certain things with samples. I'm not going to get into the details. We have a massive sewage spill in December that was sewage spill was likely preventable. Turns out there were some valves that were shut that shouldn't have been shut. If you're a sanitation district and you're running your plant in the way that it's supposed to be run, of course, let's review also the notice of violations. There were 21 or so violations that came out in, what was the date of that, August, Brad? Anyway, don't hold me to the date. And one of the things that was indicated in there was no manuals, lack of direction to the staff there. They couldn't look at things. Well, if things are like that, then it's very simple to see how a sewage spill that happened and spilled almost 400,000 gallons by one estimate, closer to 1 million gallons by another estimate. Things like that can happen when things just aren't being done right at the plant. So I'm going to read from the grand jury report. Of course, we've been here since February now talking about this. We really care about what goes out that pipe and that it gets treated properly. And one of the things we know is that there has to be a there has to be a way for that effluent to be it needs to be tested by an independent source. Okay, quick out of here. This is consequences of the failure of the board to recognize the conflict of interest. A long-term contractual relationship that is never subject to competitive bid has been in place way too long. It results in a too comfortable situation. Over the 25-year period of the contract, the district organization may have been molded. The district organization may have been molded to conform to the services provided by the administrator and the Wallace Group. The district may not obtain the best quality, reasonable cost from contract service providers. The board may be subject to continuing public mistrust. The board may be subject to legal liability for not properly fulfilling its stewardship obligations. The conflicted party, Mr. Wallace, has the potential to act improperly. So as we wrap this all up, we've still got a situation going on here. You guys as city council members, you delegate one member of your board to go to sit on the sandboard. Each, so does Aurora Grandy, so does Oceano. You guys have jobs, you have other business, you have lives. You can't possibly be informed properly to what's going on in this sewage district and this board without more information.
Jeff.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Board, my name is Brad Snook. I'm the volunteer coordinator for our county's chapter of the Surfrider Foundation. I want to say happy International Surfing Day today. A little foggy, but we'll get over that. I want to define a conflict of interest for you, because this is like public knowledge that anybody can find on the internet or a dictionary. A conflict of interest occurs when an individual or organization is involved in multiple interests, one of which could possibly corrupt the motivation for an act in the other. So yes, Rader, Wallace Group. Goals and objective, advised also. Set customer rates, advised by the Wallace Group. Develop budget, that's strictly district administrator Wallace Group. Approve budget and amendments, advised by the district administrator. Approve expenditures, advised. Engineering services, Wallace Group. Administration, Wallace Group. Contract administration, Wallace Group. Maintain budget and expense records, Wallace Group. Chief finance officer, again, the Wallace Group. Treasurer, Wallace Group. Operations of wastewater facility. District administrator supervises. Now, Jeff touched on the notices of violation. Those are all attributed to things that happened that went wrong operationally at the plant. And the water board went in and wrote them up for it and then put the chief plant operator on forced leave. So he basically lost his license to work at the plant for a little while. So here's the bottom line. How does the Sanitation District Board of Directors mitigate the conflict of interest for things that are outside of the board's control, like the operations of the plant? They don't know about that. So how do they do it? Thank you.
Do we have any other public communications? There being none, I'll close it, bring it back to the council. We shall move on to the next item, which is public hearings. And we'll move to item number 5, which is the 2010 Urban Water Management Plan update. Mr. Ray, are you taking care of this?
I am. Interesting wrinkle here. Is the overhead projector operating? I'll go ahead and begin my staff report. A portion of my report relies on being able to view a color chart on the overhead, though it would be helpful at least. Okay, well, we'll work around that. So, good evening, Honorable Mayor and City Council. I'm Greg Ray, Public Works Director, City Engineer. The item before you tonight is consideration of adoption of the Urban Water Management Plan and the Water Shortage Contingency Plan, which is contained within. Which is contained within that plan. We'll have the overhead up by the time I get to that part.
Let's see what we're doing. And my apologies for this, but we had a power outage earlier this evening. and I think it's kind of messed things up. We didn't have any live television for a while, but we are back on the air now, and I'm not sure where we're at with this, but bear with us for a moment.
That right now. There you go. I can get that. Thank you. You can bear with me for a moment here, and I'll get the chart up. We have success. All right. So I'll start over if you'd like. Honorable Mayor, City Council, I'm Gregory Ray, the Public Works Director and City Engineer. Before you tonight is consideration of the Urban Water Management Plan, adoption of the Urban Water Management Plan, and the Water Shortage Contingency Plan, which is contained within that document. The State of California Water Code outlines the requirements for all urban water suppliers in the State of California to prepare and file an urban water management plan. The state law also requires that that plan be updated every 5 years. This update meets all the requirements of the code. The code also requires the water agency to conduct a public hearing prior to adoption. That's what we'll be doing this evening. And for that reason, a copy of the plan has been made available to the public for review. Water supply and demand conditions affecting the city of Grover Beach have remained fairly consistent over the past 5 years since the original plan was adopted in 2005. As a result, the 2010 Urban Water Management Plan update is substantially the same as that adopted in 2005. The 2010 update includes the following changes that have occurred since then, less ambiguous. So tonight, my intent is to shorten the presentation somewhat. The staff report contains quite a bit of information and a lot of detail regarding water supply and demand in the city. I'm going to be presenting only major information highlights and some policy decisions, which will affect your decision to adopt the Urban Water Management Plan and the Water Shortage Contingency Plan. If council or the public have additional questions or would like more detail on a particular component of the plan, I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have. So in general, the conditions of water supply and demand in the city of Grover Beach are good. Please refer to the chart A behind me. I'm going to turn on the pointer here.
Can you use the mouse if people at home can use it
too? Okay, I'll attempt that. Okay. So what you see on this chart is a number of existing data points reflecting population, water production, and water availability. The red line with the dots that appear to be diamonds indicates that we currently have a water supply available to us of about 2,207 acre feet. I've lost the, here it is. So that's the red line there. You may note that in about 2015, that red line is shown to jump up. There's no real additional water available at this time, but that jump reflects an approximation of when additional water supplies may become available to the city, and does also reflect council's ongoing determination to identify potential sources of additional water supply. So it's just an estimate starting about 2015 that we could have as much as 400 acre feet more water. Of note is that prior to 2010, there's a number of data points representing water production. These are this line with the blue circles. And this is just water production since 1995 through 2010. A trend line has been projected through those data points. That's this black dashed line with the black squares. And that trend line is, you know, just the average of data points from 2005 through 2010. If you continue to project that trend line in a straight line, following the cursor here, as I'm doing, hopefully you can see that behind me, it basically becomes this black dotted line with black dots. That would be the trend line given past information on water demand in the city and past population trends. It is the most conservative approach to estimating demand currently in the city. And following those two lines, the red line and the trend line down here with the square white squares, you would notice that the two lines cross in about 2015. So what does that mean? Well, using the most conservative information we currently have available, I mean, everything would have to happen. The growth would have to happen at the most rapid rate that's ever been projected, and water conservation measures and future implementation of Senate Bill 7 would have to be completely ignored. If you ignored all that, around 2015, we might find ourselves having as much demand as we have supply for water. That's not the case. We have a lot of better information now. So looking back at the chart, you'll notice that in 2010, following the line again with the blue dots here, there's a significant decrease in water production. So what happened? Well, a number of things happened. First of all, we did have a rate increase, and the effect of a rate increase is generally water conservation. We've also had ongoing trend of the effects of water conservation. You can see from about 2005 to about 2010, you know, the trend is just declining rapidly downward. We have toilet retrofit programs in place. We have water washing machine retrofit programs in place, cash for grass, all kinds of water conservation information is being distributed, and it's on our website. And I think this trend that you see plummeting down here to 1,788 acre feet in 2010 is just a representation of that information that's out there now. The land use element in the general plan indicates that we'll achieve build out of approximately 15,000 population by the year 2030. Now that was developed in 2010, I believe, was the last update to the land use element. SLOCOG now has a draft population build out for water supply reliability. You know, a couple things have happened since 2005 when the original urban water management plan was produced. And first thing, of course, is the lawsuit. We had a lawsuit against our groundwater supplies and ongoing litigation. You know, we just don't know what that's going to result in. We also had evidence of potential saltwater intrusion about a year and a half ago. You know, again, we haven't seen that recently, but it's out there. Something to think about. Groundwater is about 1,400 acre feet of a total of 2,200 acre feet water supply for the city. So anything that happens to that groundwater supply, be it a legal challenge or actual potential overdraft and saltwater intrusion, could have a dramatic effect on city water. The other thing is LOPES. As a result of the Endangered Species Act, there was a lawsuit against water releases at LOPES and the operation of LOPES Dam, which could have resulted in significant decreases in the amount of water available behind the dam. Now, good news to report, as of about today, LOPES is around 98% full. And it looks quite lovely up there. It's amazing to see the lake that full. So we've had a great water year this year, plenty of rainfall. Groundwater elevations are up. You know, right now, water supply reliability looks fantastic. But we do have to keep our eye on the ball and continue, in my opinion, to pursue additional sources of water. The primary one being considered right now is spillway elevation raise at the LOPES Dam. And that could produce as much as 400 acre feet of water, which is what you see reflected in the red line on this graph. So a very complex graph there and a lot of information. Hopefully I've done a good job of boiling that down for you. The other part of the water master, our urban water management plan, besides, you know, projecting demand and supply into the future, is the water shortage contingency plan. Now, you currently have, in 2005, you adopted a water shortage contingency plan, and that plan is in effect today. Currently, you're in a stage of action under the 2005 water shortage contingency plan, and that means that we're enacting voluntary water conservation measures. Looking at this graph, appears to be working. You can see that from about 2005 to 2010, this significant decrease in water consumption per capita. The 2010 update of the Urban Water Management Plan also includes minor changes to the Water Shortage Contingency Plan that were intended to address concerns raised previously by City Council. Skip through my notes here. The primary change proposed is the use of an average of the current and previous year's rainfall, beginning with the first year the rainfall condition falls below 65% of the benchmark rainfall, to determine the appropriate water stage of action. Now, that differs from now, where you basically each year you only look at the water rainfall that year. The reason for doing this is that it does a better job of capturing long-term trends in rainfall, rather than looking at just a snapshot each year. In addition, new factors have been added into the water shortage contingency plan, such as potential saltwater intrusion and Lopez Reservoir water levels. I might also add that potential cost implications of enacting a stage 3 or higher alert are discussed in your report. I won't go into details now, but basically there could be a significant cost to the city for implementing anything beyond a stage 2. A stage 3 is the point where you begin enacting mandatory water conservation measures, and we essentially would become water cops. Financial impacts of that decision would be addressed at the time if we were to declare a stage 3 water shortage stage of action. I might also note that if you were to adopt the Urban Water Management Plan this evening and the updated water shortage contingency plan, the water shortage contingency plan would not be enacted this evening. That occurs at the end of the water year, which is the end of this month, and sometime after July 1st, we would be coming back to council with a recommendation. I can tell you that just based on the rainfall amounts, that recommendation will most likely be to discontinue a water shortage contingency action. Tonight, our staff's mostly concludes my report. Tonight, staff's recommendation is that the City Council conduct the public hearing, adopt the resolution formalizing adoption of the 2010
abilities to do other things to conserve water, capturing rainwater using cisterns, gray water, and I'm just wondering if that's something we need to be looking at some point. I'm not quite sure where we go with that, or I know we've talked about it in the past.
Yeah, and those are both great comments. Clearly, we do need to continue to consider adoption of building code standards that would allow use of gray water. I mean, it's a pretty big challenge. Use of gray water is still a significant challenge for health and safety reasons, but clearly it is an option that provides additional conservation measures. Also, the other low-tech solutions that you mentioned are already a part of our information campaign for water conservation, and those are already considered also along with our stormwater management plan also. So we're hitting that twice. The Urban Water Management Plan itself is not really the place for that kind of detail. Urban Water Management Plan is basically the state says each year you shall tell us this, and or every 5 years you shall tell us this, and here's the list, and every 5 years that's what we tell.
Okay, so I'd just like to see us agendize maybe a little bit greater detail at some point, and I think we've asked for that before. And the other thing, I've noticed our building code many, many years ago said that people are to consider drought-resistant plants, and I'd like to look at maybe taking that one step further and recommending, not requiring, but recommending native plants. And it might be as simple as putting an asterisk by which of the plants on the plant list are native plants. But I would like to see us take that additional step, but certainly not hold up this report for that. I did have a question, too. At one point, it refers to the pipe collection system, and it's the pipes are clay in some case and asbestos in others, and I wondered if you had any knowledge or feedback. I know asbestos in ceiling tiles is lethal. I don't know if asbestos in pipe collection makes any difference or not.
Asbestos cement pipes in a water distribution system are very common today, and to my knowledge, they're not considered a health risk. Okay. The pipe itself, which is interesting, if you were to remove it, and then potentially break it or go to dispose of it, the pipe itself is considered to be a risk, but not as it's used within a water distribution system.
That makes sense. Okay, thank you. And finally, I notice Appendix F is the preliminary recycled water demands, and I couldn't tell from reading that appendix whether we already have several parks that are actually using recycled water. Is that the case?
No. You have two parks that are watered with non-potable water, mm-hmm. but they're produced from wells that are basically drawing from the same water aquifer. So we have some additional pumps that produce non-potable water.
And it mentioned some in the county. I think it mentioned Black Lake Golf Course and some other golf courses.
Countywide, yes, there are.
There are. Okay.
Yes.
So that would be another thing I'd want to maybe put on our list of things that we might be able to do to conserve water at a later date, look at using recycled water. And I know surf riders have been cracking the whip every week on that one, too. So that's the extent of my questions.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Molnar?
Yes. You talked about continued water production. Is there any estimates of the cost of the spillway at Lopez of enlarging that?
There is. I don't have it off the top of my head, but I think it's actually in the report.
It is in the report. It is. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
I can find that page and locate it for you, or that's up to you.
Okay. And then are they still looking at state water?
Once again with that?
Are we still looking at state water? I know at one time we had talked about buying state water. Is that still an option?
The Northern Cities Management Area Technical Group, which I'm a member of, and as a representative of the city, was pursuing emergency state water, basically a one-time use of emergency state water, and potentially was going to store a number of acre feet at Lopez Dam for use under emergency conditions such as a prolonged drought. That discussion and the work, the efforts that had taken place till about a month ago, were proceeding ahead until such time as the state basically recognized that we're not really in a drought condition. And so the discussion of emergency state water has somewhat stalled and appears to be changing into a discussion of maybe permanent state water being used at least within the Northern City Management Area, not necessarily directly for Grover Beach, though.
Okay. Then you referred a couple times to the Santa Maria groundwater settlement. Has that been settled? Just the 2020?
Yeah, and I didn't spend a lot of time discussing that, but Senate Bill 7 basically says we will make a 20% reduction in per capita water use, domestic per capita water use, by the year 2020. In fact, further goes on to say that we'll have a 10% reduction by 2015. We will most likely meet those requirements at some point in time. We'll probably come back to council and for a formal decision on whether we want to comply with the provisions of Senate Bill 7. But basically, if you look at the trend line right now, I think we're actually seeing water conservation reductions far in extent of what's being mandated.
I guess my thought was that if we are not vigilant and just suddenly just make it so that it's really easy to people to lapse back and to stop conservation, then we'll have a problem again. I'm not saying to leave the stage two. I'm just saying that continue to help people understand that we, just because we have a lot, it looks like we have a lot of water, doesn't mean that we will always have a lot of water.
That's a good point.
Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Bright, did you have anything?
I have comments, no questions. Thank you.
Okay, let's open this up to the public. Is there anybody in the public that would like to make a comment regarding this item? There being none, we'll close it, bring it back to the board for discussion. Ms. Bright, do you have a comment?
Oh, thank you. Well, basically, I guess I'd just like to say that that our Conservation Act activities have been successful. I agree with Councilmember Molnar that I think we should continue to encourage conservation, because we just never know. We go from one extreme to the other pretty quickly. I also would like to see us continue to seek additional sources of water. It's always better to be prepared and have more than not enough. I think that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion? There being none, I will call for a motion.
I'll move for staff's recommendation.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. We have conducted the public hearing. You wish to adopt the resolution which formalizes the adoption of the 2010 Urban Water Management Plan and Water Shortage Contingency Plan. May we have a roll call vote, please?
Yes.
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 Yes. Motion passes 4-0. Next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. We have two items on the consent agenda this evening.
I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda items as presented.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second to accept the consent agenda, items 6 and 7, as published. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. The next item is item number 8, regular business. City Manager, did you want to comment on that, please?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, this is a letter from the City of Arroyo Grande requesting a joint meeting on the consolidation of law enforcement services. And before I give the staff report, I'd like to recommend that the council continue this item for at least another meeting for a couple of reasons. One, I believe that, as I noted in the report, this council has not really dialogued yet on law enforcement altogether, and I think that is probably a discussion that needs to take place, and preferably with all council members present. And then the other is just if a meeting is going to come about, I'd like to make sure that I have a consensus of everybody as to selective dates to be able to attend that meeting. So for those reasons, I'd recommend that this item be continued at least until the July 5th meeting.
Do we need a motion? Shall I make a motion for that?
Please.
I make a motion that we postpone or this particular item until, are we doing a date certain? Or?
The next meeting, which is July 5th.
Thank you.
Okay. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 4-0. At this time, I would like to adjourn the council meeting and call to order. During the meeting, call to order the joint meeting of the City Council Improvement Agency / Finance Authority. And if you are ready, Donna, would you have a roll call, please?
Here.
Here.
Here. Mayor and Chair Nichols.
Here. And
yes, you did.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Good eye. Can we accept it with corrections?
That,
I don't know what we do
it?
About that's it. That's my only
okay,
comment.
Okay, well, then I'll take a motion with the correction.
Okay, so I'll move that we accept the consent agenda with that one correction.
No, not the consent agenda. We're passing, making
that
a motion
item.
On the minutes.
Oh, the minutes. It's the only thing. Isn't it on the consent agenda? And it's the only
it
thing
is on the consent agenda.
Okay,
that's
that
the only item.
That particular item with that change.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the minutes as corrected. Do we have a second?
I second that.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion passes 4-0. The next item on the agenda is the adoption of the resolution of the Council Agency and Financing Authority on the issuance of tax allocation bonds. Mr. Perot.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, Chair, and member of the Councils and Board. Before I begin my presentation, I would like to introduce some of the financing team that is with us here tonight, because you'll probably be asking some of them questions. As you'll recall, as a result of the Council Agency Board's direction during recent meeting, actually meeting at the end of May, you directed authorized staff to go ahead and retain the individuals of the financing team, and they're here tonight, or at least a part of them are here tonight, and I'd like to introduce them so that you'll know who they are. We have Mr. Albert Pache. He's representing the A.M. Pache and Associates. He's the acting as the financial advisor. We also have Jeff Stava from Nossman. He is serving as the bond counsel and legal advisor. Also want to mention that Nossman as a firm is not foreign to us. They also assist us with water issues and have for several years. And then we also have with us Todd Smith. He's the Senior Vice President and Underwriter for Southwest Securities. To begin with, and I know I'll be repeating myself a little bit, but just to keep everything in focus, the Improvement Agency is a redevelopment agency that is authorized in conformance with state law. In 1997, there are basically two project areas within the redevelopment agency that basically permit tax increment revenue to flow into those areas, and those funds are used for largely economic development purposes, including the construction of infrastructure. The number one project area, or which is often referred to as the improvement project area, was organized in 1997, and then the enhancement project area was organized in 2000, or the industrial enhancement area was organized in 2004. Today, the net increment that flows to us, that's after you take out the housing fund, pass-throughs, et cetera, is roughly $775,000. At the time, as I mentioned during a recent meeting, at the time that the project areas were formed, there were a couple of loans that were issued between the city and the agency to provide seed money to get the project areas up and going. Those included a $906,546 of loan from the waterfront to the Agency for Improvement Project area, and then another $460,000 from the general fund to help the industrial enhancement area. Also, there was in 2008 an additional loan of $450,000 in the sewer enterprise afforded to the agency to assist in covering some costs that we had associated with the Meadow Creek storm drain project on West Grand Avenue. As you'll recall, during your last meeting, you actually formalized those loans, and they now have certain debt service payments associated with them. One of the things that has prompted all of this is that, as the council and the agency board is very much aware, the state is, in fact, attempting to eliminate redevelopment agencies. across the state of California. In fact, as reported in the staff report, the legislature did actual consultant, you may remember he was here at the end of May, provided the fiscal analysis and indicated that probably the best way to protect local revenues in terms of retaining them locally was to actually issue another bond. It is interesting that in all the legislation we've seen thus far, the only way to secure or continue receiving tax increment is the amount of increment necessary to actually make debt service payments on bonded indebtedness. To date, we have only one bond, as you're aware, that carries a $289,000 debt service payment annually. So consequently, what the Mr. Fraser did is he reviewed our revenue stream, our obligations, and determined that a prudent course of action to go with would actually to be issue an additional set of bonds sufficient to pay off those existing loans. The other threat that we're dealing with is that all of the legislation that we've seen thus far does not recognize internal loans, so it's likely if the agency was eliminated, we would lose the ability to repay those loans. The other advantage to moving ahead with a bond program at this time is because it's a tax-exempt financing, those dollars would be returned to the parent funds, but their use would be largely limited to infrastructure projects. So that means that ultimately the dollars that would be flowing back would continue to provide infrastructure improvements in the community, and that's more in line with our economic development goals as has been previously stated. As noted in the staff report, it's outlined that with the bond program, there would be bonds issued relatively in the amount of $2,325,000 for Area 1 and $1,240,000 for the industrial area. That would, as noted, in both areas, it would pay all of the existing loans and leave a residual project fund that would be available as well. Should say possibly available, depending on what happens with agency with the elimination of the agency. The other item I wanted to mention that is important about this is that just, and I'll ask Mr. Pache to go over this in more detail. The cost of issuing the bonds is roughly 6.5%, and that is pretty much in line with the last bond issue that was, and in fact, it's probably a little bit better in terms of cost than the last bond issue that was done in 2005. What you have, obviously, is a number of documents that I know that you've probably spent some time in reviewing. Those include the official statement, the purchase contract, the indenture of trust. What's being asked of you tonight is that you authorize the issuance of these bonds and approval of the necessary documents. And to do that, as outlined in the report, the agency, the city, the agency, and the financing agency would all have to take certain actions. A couple of other things I'd like to mention. Once the council has moved, or once the council and the boards have moved to issue the bonds, The next step would be completion of the rating process and then moving the bonds to market for sale. Two things about that. Actually at noon, we participated in as a team with a rater from Standard & Poor's. Actually went through a rating presentation, so that is already well underway. And the rating presentation, I can tell you, went very well. We expect to have our rating actually completed by Wednesday, that quickly, by Standard & Poor's. We're a bit fortunate in that Standard & Poor's had recently, agency boards certainly have alternatives that are available to you. One alternative would be to wait and see. It wouldn't be recommended by staff, but you could wait and see what, in fact, happens at the state and determine and hope that somehow elimination wouldn't occur. And then you could obviously go ahead and with the payments over a number of years. But I would caution about that because if redevelopment survives at all, it's likely to be remade, and we have no idea what that remake is going to look like and how it might impact those internal loans. And obviously, if you did not have those, you might lose the opportunity to retain those proceeds locally to do some very constructive work. So consequently, I know that it's a major decision that the council and the agency boards have to consider. What I'd ask is that prior to actually concluding my staff report, I'd like to ask Mr. Pache if he might address some of the fiscal issues associated with the bond issue itself and go over those a bit with you, and then the entire team would be available to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Perrault. My name is Albert Pache. Good evening, Mayor Pro Tem, council members. I was here at the last meeting when Don Frazier from Frazier & Associates presented the fiscal report. As Don mentioned, he started work on that sometime in February. Many agencies, when they heard of this potential legislation, rushed to market, some would say hastily, without that kind of fiscal consultant report. And we thought that that fiscal consultant report, when I explained to staff, would really be a checks and balances and an independent checks and balances to make sure that the tax increment was there to repay the bonds. And so with that conservative approach, as Mr. Perrault said, we discussed this with the rating agencies today. They have recently reviewed you and, as Mr. Perrault said, provided a BBB+ rating on agency area number one. That's the older project area. For agency area number two, we felt it was not prudent to proceed with trying to receive an investment grade rating because more than likely two factors would prevent it from receiving that rating, and you would only incur rating costs, which would not be valuable to the agency. Those two factors were that it's a fairly new project area. It's only been around since 2004, and you had a large concentration of your major taxpayers. So with those two factors, they would look at that, in our opinion, and say that it would not receive an investment grade rating, and then we would be liable for a portion of that rating cost. So we chose not to do that. With that, we feel that we've put together a good plan of finance that protects the agency's ability to repay the loans that were provided to it from the different enterprise funds. We feel that the cost of issuance is more than in line with what was paid 6 years ago in 2005 for the 2005 tax allocation bond issues. I'd also like to mention that all of our firms work on a contingent basis. Should the bond issue not close, should you decide not to move forward, or should the legislation come to fruition that would end redevelopment agencies, we would receive no compensation. The only thing that you would be liable for would be the rating cost since we started that process, and that would only be about $8,500. And with that, I'll be glad to answer any additional questions that you may have, as well as Mr. Stava and Mr. Smith.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Do we have any questions? Okay, where do we want to start? Ms. Mulder?
Okay. I didn't notice a payment schedule in here. Do we have one?
Yes. Can you...
I can go over... Except I can
right.
put this up.
And then of that, we are paying principal and interest?
That is correct.
Okay.
If I may put this on the overhead.
There you go. You had it.
I think it takes a second, and then it comes back on. I practice this. Okay. This is for agency area number one. What the fiscal consultant from this would be this amount of increment left over. So one of the council members, I recall, asked if the SRAP payment would be repaid. And under this scenario, should the state allow you to, it would allow you to make these payments, and it would also allow some money left over for agency and, overhead and city overhead. So this is the net increment available, after the payments, and then your debt service coverage didn't quite make it onto the page.
Yeah.
It kind of almost gets in there and then it bounces out a little bit. There we go. That's perfect. Okay. So debt service coverage is covered two times in fiscal year 10-11. And in 2012, it's 1.8 times. You can follow along over here. So the rating agencies really like this, because at most we would be down to we're basically leaving a lot of money, assuming the state doesn't take this altogether. There's still a lot of money left over to pay for these two factors. Should the state eliminate that, then they would be gone altogether. But the rating agencies like the fact that we did not bond ourselves down to the 1.25 times coverage, which allow the 2005 bonds their indenture to bond down too. So we didn't bond as aggressively as we could have. We still left a lot of money, and I think that's going to help us when we get our BBB plus reaffirmed. Do you have any questions on this? This is the most important sheet.
Mr. Mayor, and just to reiterate, when we originally approached this, it was in an effort to bond what was necessary to pay down the existing loans, and to also, at that time, we thought we would survive long enough to actually operate in outgoing years, and that's why that those dollars are left over to the right. And ultimately, that really depends on what happens with the state. As Mr. Pache has indicated, that may just plain go away.
We think, if I may, Mr. Peralt, we think this is really the best-case scenario where they leave everything in place and you can go along your merry way to repay the SRAP loan and additional city overhead. So we're not as aggressive as we could because we're hoping that that is still the case.
Very good. Thank you. Go ahead.
One other question I have. I thought I understood from reading different articles that they had said January 1st as the cutoff for any type of new obligations or contracts. So there's not any problem with us going into this bond.
I'll let Mr. Stava.
The selling bonds.
Legislation does allow, it allows the what's created, there's an oversight board that's created if the legislation is approved in its current form or signed in its current form. It allows them to go back and re-examine agreements that are entered into after January 1. However, bonded indebtedness is separate from those agreements because it's basically an obligation with an independent third party, which are the investors. So the bonded indebtedness is outside that review.
Even if we do it now after
right.
all of this?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Just want to make sure.
One of our opinions we give as bond counsel is that the bonds are validly issued. And you have followed all the proper steps. There's no basis to challenge the actual issuance of the bonds, even if they come in and look at it again.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Is that it?
Yes.
Nothing else? Debbie?
Yes, I have a few questions. It may be here, but I didn't pick it up. Is there a cost associated with the repayment of the old bond, the original bond?
No, what we would be doing, the original bond would continue to be repaid
right
here.
Okay.
What we would do is we would use some of the proceeds from the 2011 Series A to repay portions of the first four maturities here, and that would be funded into the bond issue. So that money would go to make those payments in 2012. All of 2012, which is about $90,000, portions of 2013, portions of 2014, and portions of 2015. So what would happen is that would be funded into an escrow, and your trustee would then give notice that those bonds would be called on August the 1st, and there would be a 2% call premium associated with that, which is what the promise that you made to your bondholders when those bonds were sold. It goes to lower your payments semi-annually, and then it goes to make the last payment. So that a reserve fund is typically about 10% of the issue size. And in the case of agency area number one, the reserve fund is $232,000. And in agency area number two, the way we have it structured right now, and these could change just slightly, is about $96,000. So those monies would then go to make your last payment when those mm-hmm. bonds mature. And those are just required
okay.
to have an investment grade rating. You would not be able to sell these without the reserve fund, nor could you find buyers for it if it were an unrated issue.
Thank you for explaining that. And then just one other thing, a couple of other little things, and these are, I think, more just tidying up loose ends. On page 4 of the official statement, it states that it's the second paragraph under the city, the agency, and the project area. It says that we have a city manager form of government, and that the mayor position is rotated each calendar year. So I know that's probably just cut and paste from an old document, but we need to correct that.
Yes, in fact, good. I've already forwarded that comment
Thank
to
you.
Them.
Okay. And then one other item here that I found a little bit confusing on page 6, under refunding of city obligations, it talks about an outstanding principal amount from the city's water fund of almost $907,000, and a loan from the city's wastewater fund, but it doesn't mention in there the city general fund.
It could be that the official statement that you're looking at is probably for only one project area.
Oh, that's right. That's right. There are two projects.
The industrial enhancement one is repaying the city general fund loan.
I didn't read them both because they were the same. almost. They were almost the same.
I can't fault you.
I should have caught that. Thank you. Thank you. And that's all my questions.
I just wanted to add to that. You actually are selling two series of bonds as opposed to what you did in 2005. But that was a good catch.
Very good.
Excuse me, can I one more, please?
Sure.
Okay. So we make our payment once a year, but the bondholders get their interest payment twice a year?
Well, there's semi-annual payments of interest, and then there's annual payments of principal.
Okay.
Okay, so the annual payment of interest would start on February 1st, 2012, and then the annual payments of principal and interest would be on August the 1st, 2012. And that's a typical bond structure.
Okay.
Semiannual interest payments and annual principal payments.
Just to clarify, you do make you do fill out the debt service funds as you receive your. You generally receive two, or really three, I guess, primary payments of your tax increment. As that money comes in, you do make payments to fill out those debt service funds. So it's not like you're going to make one payment at the end of the year that covers the whole following year. As you receive your tax increment revenues, you fill out the debt service funds.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Yes.
I had one other question.
Yes.
So what happens if you don't sell the bonds, and how long would it take to sell the bonds, and where do we get our money?
Those are excellent questions, and I tell Mr. Peralt and Ms. Byrd and City Attorney that we go over this just about every day. What are we going to be doing today? Our plan right now is to try to print the preliminary official statement tomorrow, and we would print both official statements hopefully tomorrow or Wednesday, and then look at potentially selling bonds as early as Thursday, and then closing perhaps as Friday or perhaps even next week.
Wow.
The dates that Mr. Peralt had in the staff report are the dates that I provided him when we were putting together a bond schedule, and those are. That would be about right. Typically, you sell bonds and then you close about 2 to 3 weeks thereafter. However, given the heightened nature of legislators that want to move forward to receive their pay, they passed a budget early, and we commensurately are moving as quickly as we can. So we would hope to have your money, I would like to say, by June 30th. But it's a day-to-day thing.
That would be
good
timing.
And we'll have to wait and see. Yeah.
Okay. Who typically buys these?
Mr. Smith can answer.
And you sell them, and they're sold in lots?
Yeah, bonds are issued in $5,000 denominations, so the minimum investment for a security of this nature would be a $5,000 investment. But your buyers of this type of debt are going to be mutual funds, the Franklin funds, the Van Kampens and so forth, and then of course retail, mom and pop retail. And our firm, we've got about 125 brokers here in California, about $5 billion in tax-free bonds under management as custodian for our retail accounts.
And that is that when the resolutions come before you and when you are going to be looking at adoption, Southwest Securities is the listed agency. However, there's going to be a holding agreement because of a potential delay that occurs or waiting period because of the atmosphere at the state. Bonds usually fund around 10 o'clock in the morning, and if, for example, the governor signs the bill that day, that could create some potential necessary reversals. So that's going to be held for a period of 24 hours or till the next day to ensure that that takes, doesn't occur. And if it isn't held with Southwest Securities, it may be held with another security firm.
All right. Thank you for that. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yes?
So my recommendation was to proceed with Southwest Securities. They've done a terrific job. As Todd explained, they have an educated sales force. They already know a lot about the city because they hold some of your bonds. But my recommendation would be, should they not be able to perform in for whatever manner, that we could move forward with another underwriter that I would recommend, and at the with the approval, of course, of the city manager.
All right. Thank you very much. I think we have one more question or more. Go ahead.
Although my colleagues have done an excellent job, I just have some clarification, please, and specifically in attachment to 2 and 3, I guess, which are the resolutions. So we're saying, for example, for 2011A, we have indicated our intention to issue up to $3 million of obligation, and then $2 million for the 2011B. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to me about that?
Sure. Generally, what the resolutions do is, and so it's typical in the financing, the actual principal amount isn't known until you actually go out into the market, and it's a factor of interest rates. So generally, we pick a number that the for the council to approve that's in the ballpark. That's kind of a not to exceed number. In this case, we were moving pretty quickly, so we picked the $3 million and $2 million, knowing that those were safe numbers, that we wouldn't be able to issue more than that, but not knowing how far below that we would be. So what's before the board is to approve these not-to-exceed numbers, approve issuance of the bonds for Series A not-to-exceed $3 million, Series B not-to-exceed $2 million, and delegate then to the chair and executive director the authority to complete the financing. So as long as the financing can be completed within those parameters, not only that, but also the 8.5% outside interest rate, it wouldn't come back to the board. So the chair and executive director are authorized to finalize the transaction. But again, it was really, we were moving quickly, and we wanted to make sure, worst thing you could do is approve a bond issue and find out we could have issued $3.5 million if that was, what you wanted to do. So generally, we pick a number that's a little bit outside what's likely to happen as kind of a safe harbor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I understand that. Now, I'm looking at, what is this? This is a 4, I think, which happens to be the resolution for approving the documents and so on. And it's the same question for both of the attachments for 2011 A and B. Can you talk to me about the underwriter's discount?
Yes. The underwriter's discount is basically the fee that the issuer pays to the underwriter, in this case Southwest Securities, to underwrite the bonds. In the kind of the perfect world, what would happen is we would have the POS distributed, which goes out to the investors. You spend a week up to 2 weeks educating investors, basically selling the deal to investors. The time comes to price. Again, from the perfect world for the underwriters, they have 100% of the deal sold to investors. At that point, you execute the purchase contract, which locks in the financing. Until the agency signs the purchase contract, you can walk away from the deal at any time. The purchase contract, again, at that point in time, the underwriter agrees to purchase the bonds at a specific dollar amounts, at specific interest rates, and at specific prices. At that point, again, typically there's kind of a 2-week period between that pricing and closing. If all the underwriter's clients walk away, the market goes up. Their buyers say, "Oh, we like these other bonds better." They're still committed. They have to buy the bonds at the prices that are in the purchase contract. So what you're really paying for is for the underwriter to commit their capital to buy the bonds at specific rates and specific dollar amounts. In this case, they're not going to be able to even have much time to do much marketing. I suspect they're probably going to the agency also approve the financing. So the city resolution is really kind of a technical one required by the Redevelopment Act that also approves the financing. For most agencies where the city council also sits as the redevelopment agency, it's kind of a redundant resolution. But there are some agencies where the city council and the redevelopment agency board are completely opposite or completely different composition. So that's really what it's intended to do, but it's one we have to go through. And the last one is the financing authority. Generally, with redevelopment bonds, you're not allowed to do negotiated sale where you enter into a contract directly with an underwriter. You have to do competitive sale, which requires two publication of notice, 2 weeks. With what we're looking at with the state is just not realistic. But it's a very common practice in redevelopment bonds in the state. Is that instead the city sells the bonds to the or the agency sells the bonds to the financing authority, which is allowed under the JPA Act and the redevelopment law, and then the JPA immediately turns around and sells them to the underwriter. So it's really a pass-through, but it requires the authority to approve the purchase contract, so that's why there's also a resolution for the financing authority.
Thank you very much for that.
It's what we did in 2005 for the
thank you. Okay,
so it's a lot to be thrown at you on a rush program, but
okay. Thank you very much. Good presentation, gentlemen. Really appreciate it. I would like to open this up to the public for any public comment. There being none, I'm going to close it. Bring it back to the board. Do we have any further discussion, or are we ready for a motion? And let me ask Council, we do have a total of six resolutions. Will they be taken one at a time, all six of them, or two of them by the each entity, or how?
It would be my recommendation that you move by entity. In other words, have them resolutions that are before the City Council voted on first, the resolutions that are before the agency next, or and then the Finance Authority? Or
I would say do the agency resolutions first, then the city resolutions and the Finance Authority.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And again, as we talked about before, if whoever is making the motion for the agency resolutions, we'd recommend that you include in your motion that recognizes that if Southwest Securities is not able to deliver on kind of the schedule that we need to, that it authorizes the executive director to select another underwriter with the assistance of the financial advisor.
All right. Thank you very much.
Do we expect that to happen?
All right. We have two resolutions, for example, to start with under the agency. Do we take those two resolutions together, or do we take them one at a time?
I would take them one at a time.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir. Okay. Appreciate it.
Okay. I'll make those motions.
Okay. You're ready?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
So I'd like to move for, now I don't have numbers on these, resolution number 1A11, a resolution of the Grover Beach Improvement Agency approving an indenture of trust, a continuing disclosure agreement, a purchase contract, escrow instructions, and an official statement making certain determinations relating thereto, and authorizing certain other actions in connection with the issuance of the agency's Grover Beach Improvement Project Tax Allocations Bonds Series 2011A, with the amendment proposed.
Well, I would say with the provision.
With the provision.
The number that identifies them is the 211A or 211A.
Okay. That's my number down there. Okay. So with the provision suggested.
All right. Do I have a second to that motion?
Well, I second that.
All right. We have a motion and a second. May we have a roll call vote, please?
Yes.
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 Then resolution, I guess that would be, I'm still not quite sure how we're numbering. 2011B. Okay.
Yes.
A resolution of the Grover Beach Improvement Agency. So I'm moving for a resolution of the Grover Beach Improvement Agency approving an indenture of trust, a continuing disclosure agreement, a purchase contract, and an official statement making certain determinations relating thereto, and authorizing certain other actions in connection with the issuance of the agency's Industrial Enhancement Project Area Tax Allocation Bond Series 211B, with the provisions suggested.
May I have a second,
I'll
please?
Second that.
We have a motion and a second. May we have a roll call vote, please?
Yes.
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 Yes. Ms. Molnar, would you like to take the next resolutions, two of them?
Which one is it?
Going back to City Council, perhaps.
Correct.
Okay. A resolution. What do you think?
You move the adoption.
I move the adoption of the resolution of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach, California, approving the financing and refinancing of the Grover Beach Improvement Project by the Grover Beach Improvement Agency.
And that would be on the
2011A. Yeah, it doesn't have that on here.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. May we have a roll call vote, please?
Yes.
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 Yes. Then I would also make a motion that the Financing Authority adopt a resolution authorizing and directing the execution of a purchase contract and directing certain related actions in connection with the Series 2011B bond issue.
I second that.
We have a motion and a second. May we have a roll call vote, please?
Yes.
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 Yes. Gentlemen, I wish to thank you for your presentations, your explanations, and I appreciate the questions from the council. Excellent questions, good understanding. Appreciate it all.
Look forward to trying to wrap it up now.
Yeah. Good job.
Thank you very much.
And does Southwest Securities have a phone number?
It might be a conflict
of interest. Why don't you give her your card?
Yeah, I'll give her.
Can the city buy its own bonds?
And the council members,
it's actually been an issue that's come up with other issuers, and we'd have to reckon. Well, the city can't buy them because they would be canceled. And as board members, we strongly recommend that you not buy them because it could create a conflict of interest.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Darn.
With that, we are going to adjourn the meeting and go back to the city council meeting. Call that meeting to order.
Sorry, Donna.
Are you ready? Donna? Do we need a roll call? No? All right. Let's move on to then, we're back to the council committee reports. And I guess we can start with Councilmember Bright. Do you have reports on any of your committees?
As a matter of fact, on Wednesday I traveled to Santa Barbara for the basin-wide air pollution council. So I'll have information from that at our next meeting. Thank you.
That's it?
Yep.
Okay, let's go to Ms. Molnar.
None at this time.
Okay. Debbie, do you have anything?
I have just one update on the Visitor Convention Bureau. Savor the Central Coast is back again. And I have rec cards, which have been distributed to the city, distributed to Holiday Inn Express, and also to the Chamber of Commerce. And I've given each of you one as well. And I'll tell you more about that next time.
Very good. Thank you. I have a report insofar as the Sanitation District is concerned. We had a meeting last Wednesday. We are in the process of preparing an answer to the grand jury, which will be made public to everybody. And I think the statements made by Mayor Ferrara on behalf of the board at the last meeting were very appropriate. And there will be an explanation and answers given to a lot of the items that were put out in the report by the grand jury. And other than that, there has been no meetings of the Resource Advisory Board or the Zone 3 Advisory. Those meetings have yet to occur this month. So with that, let's move on to the next item on the agenda. The city manager reports and comments.
Just thank you. I knew that that last item that you dealt with was took a lot of work and a lot of focus, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mr. City Attorney.
Thank you, Mayor. Nothing right now.
Okay. With that, we are going to go into closed session. Would you like to announce closed session, please?
Certainly. It is the intention of the City Council to meet on two items in closed session, the first one being conference with labor negotiations and all employee groups, the second one, existing litigation, City of Grover Beach versus Listio et al.
We're adjourned?
Huh?
We're adjourned?
No, I don't think we adjourned. We're going into closed session.
Oh, I guess not. Okay. This is what I know. Mm-hmm.